to Rubber Duck Radio. It's been a few weeks since our last episode, and I'll be honest, life just kind of got in the way. Paul's been busy, I've been busy, and, you know, the recording schedule sort of fell apart. But we're back now, and we're going to try to make this more regular again. So, yeah, thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, sorry about the gap. Sometimes the day job just, like, consumes everything. But I'm glad we're back at it.
All right, so I've been thinking about something lately that I wanted to kick around with you. It's about AI and, like, how it's actually changed my day-to-day work. And I think the narrative we keep hearing is that AI is going to take our jobs, right? Like, software development as a profession is doomed. But here's what I've actually experienced. AI isn't taking my job. It's taking away all the easy stuff.
That's an interesting way to frame it. So it's not replacing you, it's just changing what you spend time on?
Exactly. And here's the thing. None of the difficult problems have, like, gone away. AI has just made the easy stuff much easier. And in some ways, that's actually made me more stressed out than before. Which is, I don't know, ironic, because AI was promised to solve all our problems and be the end of the software development profession. Instead, it's just changed what I work on.
I feel that. It's like you used to have this mix of work, right? Some days you'd crank out straightforward features, get that little dopamine hit of productivity. Other days you'd wrestle with the hard architectural problems. Now it's just hard problems all the time.
That's exactly it. When simple software problems are, you know, table stakes, there's no need for developers to spend their time on those things. We're pushed into spending all our time on the difficult stuff. And I see this as a double-edged sword. On one hand, I do software development because I'm a problem solver at heart. I don't care that much how the problem gets solved, I just want to solve it. But on the other hand, it's changed the pacing of my job completely.
Right. You used to have this natural rhythm. Build a form, feel productive. Debug a weird edge case, feel challenged. Write some tests, feel responsible. Now it's just edge cases and architecture all day long.
And here's what I miss. I used to have this flow where I'd get to work on easy, rewarding stuff in between the hard problems. It was like a mental palate cleanser. Now I spend nearly all my time on the most difficult technical issues. And that's, like, exhausting in a different way.
Yeah, it's like going from a job with variety to a job that's just intensity. Which sounds good in theory, right? Like, oh, I'm only working on the important stuff now. But in practice, humans need those easier wins to, you know, stay motivated.
Totally. And I think this is going to make the job more difficult for a lot of people. Not because the work itself is harder, but because the emotional pacing is different. You don't get those little victories sprinkled throughout your day. It's just one hard problem after another.
I wonder if that's actually going to create a divide in the industry. Like, some developers are going to thrive on the constant challenge, and others are going to burn out because they need that variety.
I think you're right. And here's the other thing I've noticed. AI has made me faster, but speed isn't the same as satisfaction. I can ship more features now, but each one feels less earned. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. There's something about struggling through a problem and, like, emerging on the other side that gives you a sense of accomplishment. When AI just hands you the solution, you lose that, even if the solution is correct.
Exactly. And I think this is the part that the AI optimists miss. They talk about productivity gains, but they don't talk about what it feels like to actually do the work. The craft of software development isn't just about output. It's about, you know, the experience of building something.
Right, and when AI strips away the craft part, the typing, the debugging, the little puzzles, what's left is just the hard decisions, the architectural trade-offs, the business logic that actually matters. And that's mentally taxing in a way that's different from just being busy.
Here's another way to think about it. AI has raised the floor, but also raised the ceiling. The floor is higher because I can produce competent code faster. But the ceiling is also higher because now I'm expected to tackle problems that used to be considered too complex or, like, too time consuming.
And the expectations shift. Your manager sees you shipping faster and thinks, great, now you can take on even more complex work. They don't realize that what they're actually doing is, like, removing the breathing room.
That's exactly it. And I think this is where the stress comes from. It's not that I'm working more hours. It's that every hour is now spent at, like, maximum cognitive load. There's no coasting, even for a moment.
I've felt that too. And honestly, I think we need to talk about this more as an industry. Everyone's celebrating the productivity gains, but nobody's talking about the mental toll of, you know, constant high-stakes decision-making.
The moral of the story here is that AI isn't eliminating our jobs. It's transforming them into something that might actually be harder, not technically, but emotionally. And if we don't acknowledge that, we're going to see a lot of developers like burning out.
So what's the fix? Do we just accept that this is the new normal?
I don't think there's a simple fix, but I think being aware of it is, you know, the first step. And maybe we need to intentionally create space for the easier, more satisfying work, like deliberately choosing to work on some things from scratch, even when AI could do it faster, just to remember why we got into this field in the first place.
That's a good point. It's like keeping a hobby garden, even though you could buy vegetables at the store. Sometimes the process matters more than the efficiency.
You know, that actually connects to something I've been working on lately. I've been thinking a lot about how to make AI tools feel more intentional, less like this overwhelming fire hose of capability, and more like a set of focused instruments that each do one thing really well.
Oh, interesting. What do you mean by that?
So I've been building these small composable projects. They're basically specialized co-pilots. Each one is designed to help with a specific task, and they all implement their own MCP server.
Right. MCP has been getting a lot of attention lately. Anthropic really like pushed it forward with Claude Desktop.
Exactly. And here's what's cool about it. Because each of these projects speaks MCP, I can interact with them from like wherever I am. I can be in Claude Code or Cursor or even between these small projects themselves. It's like instead of having one giant AI that does everything, I have this ecosystem of focused tools that all talk to each other.
That's a different mental model than what most people are doing. Usually it's like, let me just ask Claude to do everything.
Yeah, and that works for a lot of things, but I've found that when you have these specialized tools, the AI gets way better at the specific task. Like I built this thing called AI Charts. It's a flowchart and diagram builder. It's got its own MCP server with like 18 different tools. So I can be in Claude Desktop and say, hey, create me an ERD for this database schema. And it calls out to AI Charts, which is purpose built for that kind of work.
So the AI isn't trying to figure out how to draw a diagram from scratch. It's got this whole tool set specifically for, you know, that domain.
Exactly. And it goes deeper than that. AI charts can do flow charts, ERDs, swim lane diagrams. It's got auto layout, validation. It can export to Mermaid syntax, markdown, PDF. But the key thing is all of that is accessible through MCP. So any AI assistant that speaks MCP can like drive it.
That's smart. It's like building an API, but for AI agents instead of human developers.
That's exactly what it is. And here's where it gets really interesting. I built another one called AI Sound. It's an AI native audio editor. Think of it like a modern replacement for Audacity, but built from the ground up with LLM integration. It's got multi-track editing, transcription, speaker diarization, semantic search across your audio content.
Wait, so you could be editing this podcast in AI Sound and have an AI assistant helping you through MCP?
Totally. I could be in Claude Desktop and say, find all the sections where we talked about MCP and export them as a clip. And it would call AI Sound's MCP server, which has tools for searching transcriptions, trimming audio, exporting. The AI doesn't need to know how audio processing works. It just knows the semantic operations.
That's wild. It's like each project becomes this little island of expertise that any AI can tap into.
And here's the thing that connects back to what we were talking about earlier. This approach actually helps with that stress problem. Because instead of AI being this monolithic thing that's constantly rewriting my code and changing my workflow, these tools feel more like instruments. I pick them up when I need them. They're, you know, designed to do specific things well.
Yeah, I can see that. It's the difference between having a Swiss Army knife that does everything okay versus having a set of actual tools that each do one thing really well.
Right. And the other piece of this is that both AI Charts and AI Sound work with any OpenAI compatible LLM. So I can run them fully local with Alama, or I can connect them to OpenAI, Grok, whatever. No vendor lock-in. That was important to me. I didn't want to build something that like only works with one provider.
That's been a theme with a lot of the AI tooling lately. People are realizing they don't want to be tied to one model or one company.
Exactly. And MCP is actually helping with that too in a weird way, because if everything speaks MCP, then it doesn't matter as much which LLM you're using. The protocol becomes like the interface layer.
So you're basically building your own little ecosystem of AI tools that all work together independent of any one company's roadmap.
That's the idea. And it's been fun, honestly. Like, this is the kind of development work that still feels rewarding to me. Building something small and focused, making it work well, giving it a clean interface. It's, you know, craft. So here's something I've been thinking about lately. It feels like we've hit this plateau with AI model intelligence. Like, since GPT-4o came out, have we really seen any huge leaps in raw intelligence? I'm not sure we have.
That's an interesting observation. I mean, we keep seeing new model releases with better benchmark scores, but...
But the benchmarks are being gained. There's actually been some really interesting research on this. Did you see that paper from Stanford about data contamination?
No, what did they find?
So they developed this test where they'd mask a wrong answer in a multiple choice question and ask the model to fill in the gap. And here's the thing. GPT-4 could guess the missing option with like 57% accuracy. On test data, it theoretically shouldn't have seen.
Wait, so the model had basically like memorized the test answers?
That's what it looks like. The benchmark scores are inflated because the models have been trained on the test data either directly or through like contamination in their training corpus. And this isn't just one benchmark. SWEbench, MMLU, Chatbot Arena, they're all dealing with this problem.
So when we see these headlines about new model beats previous benchmark record, we should be like skeptical.
More than skeptical. There was this great MIT Technology Review piece about SWEbench, you know, the coding benchmark that everyone uses now. The researchers noticed that high-scoring models were training exclusively on Python because that's what the benchmark used. So they'd get great scores, but then, like, fail completely when tested on other languages.
So you're not building a better software engineer, you're building a, like, SWEbench specialist.
Exactly. One researcher called it gilded. Looks nice and shiny at first glance, but try to run it on something different and the whole thing falls apart. Andrej Karpathy actually called this an evaluation crisis. We've run out of trusted ways to measure actual capabilities.
But here's what I've noticed, and I think this gets to your point about plateaus. The models do feel more useful than they did a year ago. So like something's improving.
Yes, that's exactly it. And here's what I think is happening. The raw intelligence hasn't jumped that much, but the tooling around AI has like matured significantly. Like function calling has gotten way better. Gemini 3 has this internal thinking process that helps it reason through when to call a function and what parameters to use.
And that's not the model being smarter. That's the software around it being, you know, better designed.
Right. The fine tuning for tool use has improved. The orchestration layers have improved. The way we structure prompts and context has improved. But the underlying model, it's not that different from GPT-4o. We're just like wrapping it in better software.
That actually explains a lot. Like Claude Code feels way more capable than using Claude in a chat interface, but it's like the same model underneath.
Exactly. The difference is the tooling. Claude Code has this whole system around the model. File system access, terminal integration, context management, agentic loops. That's where the improvement is coming from, not from some like breakthrough in model intelligence.
So when people say AI is getting smarter, what they're really seeing is AI tooling is getting more sophisticated.
That's my theory. And honestly, I think this is a good thing. It means the progress is more like sustainable. We're not waiting for some magic breakthrough in model architecture. We're doing what software engineers have always done, building better systems around the tools we have.
It also explains why your MCP projects are so interesting. You're not trying to build a smarter model. You're building better interfaces between models and, you know, specific tasks.
That's it. The intelligence is table stakes now. The question is, what can you do with it? How do you structure the problem? How do you design the interface? That's where the real innovation is happening right now. Not in the model weights, but in the software architecture around them.
And that's something we can actually control. We're not dependent on OpenAI or Anthropic to like release the next breakthrough.
Right. We can build better tooling today. And I think that's where the next year of progress is going to come from. Not from models that are fundamentally smarter, but from software that makes better use of the, you know, intelligence we already have. So here's something I've been thinking about a lot lately. As AI gets better at generating code, the role of a software developer is like shifting. And I think it's shifting toward two things, taste and specificity.
Yeah, I can see that. When the model can generate reams of code for you, everything comes down to like honing what you build and making sure you're steering it correctly.
Exactly. And here's the thing. When anyone and their mother can throw together a simple Facebook clone or another flavor of to-do list, what matters is what you build and, you know, how you build it. The technical implementation becomes less of a differentiator.
Right. I saw this article recently that put it really well. Taste is eating Silicon Valley. The argument was that as software becomes commoditized, taste emerges as the like new differentiator.
That resonates with me. And I think taste is incredibly difficult to duplicate. You can copy someone's code, you can even copy their architecture, but copying their design sensibility, their understanding of what makes a product feel right, that's like much harder.
Totally. And it's also about specificity. Like, AI is great at generating generic solutions, but the value is in the specific. Understanding exactly what your users need, the edge cases that matter, the small details that make something feel, you know, polished.
I was reading this piece from ThoughtWorks about the Dora report, and they had this great insight. They said real-world software development is messy, it's filled with ambiguities, unstated requirements, constantly shifting priorities, and that requires like human judgment and contextual understanding.
Yeah, that's exactly it. AI can generate code at lightning speed, but it lacks the intuition to like anticipate how that code might break an existing system or introduce security vulnerabilities or create technical debt. You need humans for that judgment call.
And here's what's interesting. The Dora report found that 95% of developers rely on AI, but 30% have like little to no trust in AI generated code. So there's this trust but verify approach that's emerging.
That's exactly how I work with it. I treat it like Stack Overflow, useful, but I'm not just like copy pasting without thinking. I'm critically evaluating, guiding, validating the work.
Right. And I saw someone describe it as developing taste, the ability to detect subtle errors in AI generated work at speed. That's becoming like a core skill, not just writing code, but having the taste to know when the AI's output is good enough and when it needs refinement.
I'd add one more thing. The article mentioned that routine implementation becomes cheaper while judgment-heavy work becomes more valuable. That's, you know, the shift we're seeing.
Exactly. And I think this is where taste and specificity intersect. You're not just implementing features anymore. You're making constant judgment calls about what to build, how to build it, what to prioritize, what the right trade-offs are. The AI can help you execute, but it can't, like, make those judgment calls for you.
Yeah, and that's both exciting and daunting. On one hand, you're freed from the tedious stuff. On the other hand, you're now responsible for like all the high stakes decisions.
That's the moral of the story here. The job isn't going away, it's evolving. And the developers who thrive will be the ones who develop strong taste, who can be specific about what they want, who can guide the AI toward the right solution rather than just, you know, accepting whatever it generates.
Same here. And honestly, that's the part of the job I've always enjoyed most anyway. The design decisions, the product thinking, the craft of making something feel right. So maybe this shift isn't like so bad after all.
So I came across this article recently that really crystallized something I've been feeling. The headline was provocative. The death of coding is canceled. Why your AI assistant is quickly becoming an imbecile.
That's quite a title, but honestly, I kind of agree.
Right? So the thesis is this. At the start of a project, AI seems like a demigod. You ask it to build something, it just does it. Magic. But that ends quickly. And the article argues there's actually a like mathematical reason why AI will never replace programmers.
Let me guess. It's the context problem.
Exactly. So here's what the research shows. Traditional AI coding assistants operate within 4,000 to 8,000 token context windows. That's roughly 3,000 to 6,000 words. Now think about your typical production code base. We're talking like hundreds of thousands of lines, millions of tokens. The AI literally cannot see the whole picture.
And this is where it gets interesting. There's actual data on this. Studies show a noticeable reduction in accuracy once context length crosses like 32K tokens. And for code bases over 15,000 lines, performance degrades significantly.
So the AI starts strong. It's a demigod at the beginning when the project is small. But as your code base grows, it becomes, what's the word the article used?
An imbecile, which is harsh, but accurate in terms of capability. It's not that the model got dumber, it's that the problem, like, outgrew its ability to understand it.
And here's the thing. This connects directly to what we were talking about earlier. The more a task depends on understanding the broader code base, the more likely AI is to, like, miss the mark. Codo's 2025 State of AI Code Quality Report found exactly this. These aren't edge cases. These are the tasks where developers expect the most value.
It's like, imagine hiring an architect who can only see three rooms at a time. Sure, they can design a great bathroom, but ask them how the bathroom fits into the whole house, they're like guessing.
That's perfect. And this is why the death of coding keeps getting canceled. Every few years, someone announces that programmers are obsolete. Packages were supposed to replace us. 4GLs, visual coding, case tools, Rails and opinionated frameworks, now AI. And every time, the prediction fails for like the same reason.
Because the hard part was never the typing.
Right. The hard part is understanding how everything connects. It's knowing that changing this function over here breaks that integration test over there, which reveals a bug in the authentication flow, which exposes a like race condition in the message queue. That's the job.
And AI can't do that because it literally can't hold all that in its head. Even with massive context windows, we're seeing 128K, even 1M tokens now. The research shows that just throwing more context at the problem doesn't, you know, solve it. The signal to noise ratio gets worse.
There's actually this great Hacker News thread from the creator of Aider, you know, that AI coding tool. And he says, this is perhaps the number one problem users have. Very large context windows aren't useful in practice because the model like gets lost in the noise.
So the AI goes from demigod to imbecile, not because it changed, but because the problem changed. The scope expanded beyond what it can, you know, reason about.
And this is why I'm actually optimistic. Not in a AI will never be useful way, but in a this is why we still need humans way. The AI is an incredible tool for like starting projects, for prototyping, for generating boilerplate. But as the system grows, the human becomes more important, not less.
Because you're the one who can hold the whole architecture in your head. You're the one who understands why this decision was made 3 years ago, what that legacy system integration requires, how this change like ripples through the organization.
Exactly. And this connects to what we said about taste and specificity. When the AI can generate reams of code, you become the like conductor. You're not obsolete, you're more essential than ever. But your role shifts from typing to steering.
From builder to architect, from coder to, you know, systems thinker.
The moral of the story is the death of coding has been greatly exaggerated. Again, the tools change, but the core challenge remains. Understanding complex systems and making good decisions about them, that's still like a human job.
So Tim, if we zoom out from all of this, what's the takeaway? AI takes the easy stuff, we build focused tools, the models aren't getting smarter, but the software around them is, taste matters more than ever, and if we're not careful, our AI assistants turn into like imbeciles?
Here's the moral of the story, and I've been thinking about this a lot. AI was sold to us as this like existential threat, right? The end of software development as we know it. But the reality is way more nuanced. It's not taking our jobs, it's taking away the easy wins. It's not getting exponentially smarter, it's getting better tooling. And it's not replacing our judgment, it's making our judgment more valuable than ever. But here's the thing. That doesn't mean everything is fine. The job is harder now. The pacing is different. We're spending all our time on the difficult problems with like no palate cleansers in between. That's real.
Right. And I think that's why building our own tools matters so much. Like with AI charts and AI sound, these aren't just random projects. They're about like taking back some control, saying, okay, if AI is going to change my job, I'm going to shape how it changes my job. I'm going to build co-pilots that work the way I want, that integrate with each other, that I can steer.
Exactly. And that connects to the taste and specificity thing too. When anyone can spin up a to-do list app or a Facebook clone, what separates the good developers from the, I don't know, the people just generating code? It's knowing what to build. It's understanding why. It's having the judgment to say, no, that's not quite right, and like steering the AI towards something better.
It's like the AI can generate 1,000 options, but it can't tell you which one is the, you know, right one. That's still on us.
And that's why the death of coding narrative is so wrong. Coding isn't dying, it's evolving. We're becoming architects, editors, curators, quality controllers. The imbecile problem that article talked about, that's what happens when you like abdicate responsibility. You let the AI run wild, it creates a mess, and suddenly you're debugging a code base you don't understand.
So the answer isn't to use less AI, it's to use it more intentionally. Keep the human in the loop, stay close to the code, build tools that give you control, not ones that like take it away.
Right. And maybe that's the silver lining in all of this. The easy stuff being automated away, that forces us to level up, to focus on the things that actually matter. Understanding our users, making good architectural decisions, having taste, knowing when to like push back on a feature request. Those were always the important parts of the job. AI just stripped away the padding.
I like that. It's like we used to have this mix of easy and hard, and now it's just hard. But maybe that's pushing us to become better at the parts of the job that were always, you know, the most valuable.
Yeah. And look, I'm not going to pretend it's all sunshine and roses. The stress is real. The pacing change is real. But I'd rather be in this position where my judgment and taste and problem-solving skills matter more than in a position where I'm just like cranking out boilerplate that any model could write.
Totally. And for anyone listening who's feeling that same stress, you're not alone. This is a like weird transition period. The tools are maturing faster than our workflows can adapt, but the answer isn't to fight the AI, it's to shape it. Build your own co-pilots, learn MCP, stay close to your code, keep your taste sharp.
Well said. And hey, thanks for bearing with us through the hiatus. Life happens. Day jobs consume everything sometimes. But we're back and we're going to try to keep this more regular. There's a lot happening in this space. And I think having honest conversations about it, not just the hype, but the real lived experience, that's valuable.
Yeah, we appreciate you sticking around. If any of this resonated with you, the stress, the tooling, the taste thing, hit us up. We'd love to hear how you're navigating this transition, what's working for you, what's like driving you crazy.
Until next time, keep coding, keep your taste sharp, and remember, the AI is only as good as the human, you know, steering it.
Catch you in the next one.